And now, welcome to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and there is, as there is so often in Wisconsin and Madison too, of course, music in the air. Alban Gerhardt will be performing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night. That's Friday at 7:30, and Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. The William Walton Cello Concerto, also on the program, Rossini's massive Semiramide Overture, and even more massive, to say the least, the Brahms Symphony No. 1. And welcome back to our studio, Alban Gerhardt.
Thanks for having me.
And so much the more welcome to is your cello, which you have brought in. Is this the one that you usually perform with?
Yeah, I only own one.
Really?
Yeah. I own one bow, one cello, that's it.
Is that
breaks, I just take holidays.
Well, it's nice that you have that that freedom, I guess. Let's hope it doesn't happen, though.
Yeah, and if it breaks, there's always, you can find substitutes somewhere, and it's easy to fix. But until now, it has never broken. So,
and just for the review purposes, what's the pedigree of your cello?
It's from Venice, some Italian maker, Matteo Goffrilla. Casals played all his life on a Goffrilla, and it's from 1710. So cellists like these instruments. They're quite stable and not as capricious as a Stradivari, and not as expensive.
There is that, too. Well, you have generously offered to play some for us, and you've been working on and performing the two of the Bach cello suites lately?
Well, I played all of them.
All six.
2 days ago, just in a house concert as a preparation for recording them next month. So I'm trying to play it as often as I can. Because my goal is to play it as improvised as possible, so that it doesn't sound like an etude or something studied, but something made up in the moment. And that's quite tricky, actually.
It is, but you know, that's the kind of the effect you get with Bach sometimes, isn't it? That it's almost like a jam session.
Yeah. Everything works well, that's what you get. And if it doesn't work well, it just sounds etude.
A little cut and dried, you know, a little lackluster. Well, you're going to give us the prelude
of the sixth in D major.
Thank you.
To say it leaves the listener wanting more, and there is a lot more where that came from.
Music there.
Dance-like quality you put into that prelude, I'd say.
Yeah, there's a lot of already elements, more than in any of the other preludes, dance elements, because actually there are no dances. The preludes are just preparation for what's coming up. And then actually the next one, the Allemand of the Sixth Suite, is very hard to make a dance from it. It rather sounds like a long lyrical line. So it's
but an Allemand is supposed to be a German dance.
Exactly. No, he's just experimenting there and going far beyond what he has done in the other suites, which is it's quite interesting to play them in procession because it starts quite simple with the G major and then it evolves and the sixth suite is the crowning of them all, probably.
What is he doing? Things with key signatures that also have a kind of a progression to them, do you think?
No, I'm sure there's theories, but I don't see them.
There always are with Bach.
It's a nice variety. It's nice to play them. It doesn't really get boring to play them all. I just did it, and it was 2.5 hours of music. It took one little break in between, and I wasn't even as tired as I used to be. So maybe in age, I don't tire as much. It's good.
Building up the stamina.
Maybe.
Sure. I mean, and I think not just physically, but kind of intellectually, too.
Yeah.
With something like Bach in particular. Now, do you? Shall I give you a minute to put that down?
No.
Are you okay? All right.
I'm fine.
Then come on over here. We'll be hearing some of your. We'll be hearing some of your CDs that you've recorded over the years, and I wanted to get first though a little insight into this Walton Cello Concerto that you're going to be playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend. Walton's own, at least professed favorite among his concertos.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you wonder sometime if a composer isn't either just kind of a little defensive about a piece, or maybe his favorite is his latest piece, or could be genuinely this was his favorite.
Well, from all I know from Walton, I like the cello concerto best too, but I'm biased, so you shouldn't ask me. But I think it's a masterwork, and it's far too rarely done. Actually, John Demain, the conductor of the Madison Symphony, told me it's probably the first time it has ever been performed in Madison. And it was written in the 20th century, but it's deeply romantic. I mean, it's lush and gorgeous music, spectacular fireworks in the middle movements and beautiful tunes. It's really incredible. I have no idea why it's not being played more often.
Now, it has two or three different endings, as I understand it. There was it Piatigorsky was concerned that the original ending, which I believe is still the one most frequently played, was just a little too quiet and maybe not dramatic enough. And even Heifetz, who of course is a violinist, not a cellist, had some of the same misgivings. So I hear that there were at least two other endings to this. Which one are you going with?
The one everybody does. And I think maybe that's also a reason why it's not being played as much as it should be. If the composer himself somehow agrees with the performer that the ending isn't good enough and he writes another one, he should be, I think he should have taken a stance. Say, listen, play it or leave it. It's a masterpiece, and this ending makes so much sense. It's a gorgeous ending. The circle closes. Indeed, it ends softly, but very movingly. I mean, whenever I played it, people like it very much.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They don't start screaming right away, but who cares about screaming?
Yeah, we got plenty of that anyway. Yeah, and I mean, and there are different ways to react to a piece, even a concerto. I mean, sometimes it's a quieter, more introspective reaction, and sometimes, you know, they're standing on their seats.
Well, when I was younger, I wanted people to stand on the seats. And now, now I come to realize, actually, when I go to a concert and when I'm most moved, I'd rather not clap at all. I'm rather quiet, and I clap because it's the polite thing to do. Mm-hmm. But when I'm the deepest moved, I don't scream. I scream when I hear, I love Rachmaninoff piano concertos. One screams because it's just circus-like, gorgeous music, but right. It doesn't really move me deeply. This Walton is something to be moved by.
Do you think there are differences between the reactions of European audiences and Americans? Americans, I ask that because in the last couple of years, having been to concerts in Vienna and Budapest, for example, I noticed that you don't get as many standing ovations, but the applause lasts longer.
Yeah, I prefer American way.
You like it?
I don't like the going back and forth thing. Uh-huh. I love when it's over after two curtains.
It's more dramatic all around.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't like this bowing thing. It's very strange. And especially, I cannot really be so proud of what I did because I didn't. I'm just playing the music from some genius. And I'm always a bit bewildered when maestros or soloists let themselves be celebrated after just playing the most amazing music. There's one conductor, Andres Nelson, who's in Boston now, who I don't know how he's doing it these days, but he refuses to take a solo bow.
Really?
And he, when people go completely crazy, he just points to the score and says, yeah, it's the music. It's not us. I'm not a genius.
Well, no,
nobody. There's no single genius conductor, performer. We are no geniuses. We are just very lucky to play genius music.
It was Arthur Rubinstein who actually said that as a performer, he felt that he and his fellow performers were actually vampires. They were living off the genius of, you know, the dead Chopin or the, you know, in your case, the dead Walton.
Yeah, but he was aware of it. Some people just forget, and then they think they're the geniuses themselves, and it's ridiculous. Little servants of music, but nothing more.
You used to hear a lot of Herbert von Karajan in rehearsal, didn't you, in Berlin?
Well, rehearsal and concerts. My father was member of the orchestra for 45 years, so I went quite often with score, and I was a nerdy little kid.
You went with the score.
Once I got punished for not having done my homework, and they didn't take me to the concert with Bruckner Symphony. And other kids, they punish with taking them to a Bruckner Symphony.
So we were talking about that the other day, in fact. Child. Yes, it depends on how much you like Bruckner or the expansiveness of Bruckner.
I just loved any kind of... Actually, I always loved orchestra music. I should have become a conductor, but now it's too late.
Well, and you had some things to say about the difference between being in an orchestra and the solo career. I mean, you were attracted, originally to being an orchestra performer like your father.
Well, I didn't know any other profession.
As opposed to the solo career, though.
Yeah, or any other career. Well, I knew teaching. My father was a fantastic teacher. But that took so much away from us, children and family, that actually that was out of a question as well, because I wanted to be a father also. And if you're a teacher, when I put my father's standards, you cannot be a father and a teacher. It's either or.
But now you're this, for a long time now, freelance soloist, and that has to take you on the road and away from the family.
Yeah, but I'm happy playing 70 concerts a year, and the rest I'm home. So my kid sees me quite often.
That's on the low side, isn't it, for a major league soloist?
Yeah, I don't understand the colleagues who keep themselves far too busy. I'd rather take the things I like to do, and we get paid well enough that we don't have to play 150 concerts. I don't know why people do it, but I'm very happy like that.
For a while, you were playing in these rather unconventional, untraditional venues. Are you still doing some of that?
I'm getting too old for that. Well, whenever somebody puts it up, I do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the energy to push for it. And we just moved cities from Berlin to Madrid, so that took too much energy. But whenever an orchestra or an organization asks me, I say yes, and then I play wherever they want me to do. So I think parts of feeling fine with playing all six Bach suites in a row and not tiring out was that I did it for, I don't know, a couple of days touring on the train and playing them numerous times during 3-4 days, all of them, and in a train station, a little amplification, but it uh-huh. took so much energy and so much concentration that now to play it in a concert hall or in a living room seems like a piece of cake.
How did that go in the train station?
Partly incredible. I mean, some locations weren't good enough, then people just rushed by. But
sure.
in most of the locations, people really gathered and listened to entire suites. And it was interesting to see that this genius music of Johann Sebastian Bach transformed an ordinary train station into a concert hall, into a temple of music, just by the music being played and the people standing there and listening and paying attention. And one old lady came to me, she said she heard it in the radio that I would be playing, and she goes to concerts often, but this was the first time that she ever felt as involved ever before, because she had to put so much energy into listening. In a concert hall, she sometimes dozes away, so do I.
Not as a player, we hope.
once, twice even. But there she had to actively listen. So that it was a new experience to really make an effort, because she had to block out the noises from the trains and from the people. And it was a completely different listening experience for her.
That's kind of the opposite of what you would think.
Yeah, very interesting.
Fascinating. Well, we'll hear one of your fairly recent recordings. We got this in 2012, 6 years ago, and it was probably recorded, I think, not too long before that, your Foray CD.
Oh, yeah, it's probably 2011, something like that. They always need a year to turn over.
Sure. And Foray, not thought of immediately as a cello composer, but he has a couple of full-length cello sonatas and then a handful of charming pieces. What can you tell us about this romance?
Oh, God, I forgot.
Do you remember?
I mean, whenever I record something, I learn it and I memorize it and I record it by heart, but
we hear that often.
So long ago that uh-huh. I think I haven't played it since.
Well, listen to it and see what you think. Give
okay.
us a report after. Well, what did you think?
Interesting piece. Mm-hmm. It's not, yeah, Fauré is not as completely easy listening as you think.
No, not at all. Although he does tend to have a kind of a soft-spoken presentation.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's there's some interesting...
What did you think of the cellist?
It's all right.
It's all right. If you were to play it again, what might you do differently? Anything?
Probably, but I didn't listen now carefully enough to
we were talking.
Actually, I used to, when I went to concerts, I would always listen with a very critical mind, and I realized that I didn't really then enjoy the music enough. And nowadays, I just really indulge in the beauty of performance without trying to take apart
the little technical
or even interpretatorial. I just like to hear great music.
Well, thanks for sharing some of yours. We'll have this quiz question. We'll be back with a bit more from Alban Gerhardt. This is WPR. Now back to the artistry of Alban Gerhardt. And in this case, this is one of your older CDs. It goes back to 1999 or even a little early. You remember this one?
Yeah, that's changed cover a couple of times. But that's actually, I like these pieces on it. Actually, my favorite there is Alborada del Gracioso by Ravel, but I guess that's a bit too long.
Well, no.
8 minutes or so.
No, we can do that.
It's really cool transcription by Castelnuovo Tedesco.
Oh, who was a prominent 20th century composer, who has a guitar concerto to his credit and some other things too. All right, so Alborada del Gracioso, Morning Song of the Jester by Ravel it is, and the pianist is?
Rina Dokshinsky.
That is a fun piece, that Alborada del Gracioso.
Yeah, I love it.
And by the way, the pianist for your foray that we heard earlier, Cecile Lacade.
Yeah, one of my favorite living pianists.
We'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question here, maybe some more from Alban Gerhardt. And we'll, of course, eventually give away a prize, too. All after this on WPR. Back with Alban Gerhardt now. He's performing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday night. That's tomorrow night already at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 in a program that features Rossini's Semiramide Overture, the Brahms First Symphony, and William Walton's Cello Concerto, which will be the centerpiece and the work that will bring into the spotlight Alban Gerhardt. You have recorded some other concertos, though, and some that are... arguably a little bit out of the way, too. Dohnányi and Enesco and Eugène or Eugen d'Albert.
Yeah, especially the d'Albert was a standard repertoire piece until, I don't know, the 20s or 30s.
Right, yeah. Funny
then
how these
disappeared.
Things,
there's many pieces which... Now, last week I played Shlomo from Ernest Bloch.
Sure.
In Washington, and it hadn't been played there for 15 years. I haven't played it in 17 years. So this was a standard thing in the 90s, and now out of the repertoire.
They come and go, and then some years you'll find, for no apparent reason, the same concerto, three different places all at the same time.
Comes back. Yeah, it's always interesting to see how that happens. Maybe with the Walden the same. Now, I played it in Hamburg last month, or in November, so suddenly I hadn't played it for 10 years, and suddenly it pops up again. So hopefully it stays.
Keeps things exciting. Well, here is the first movement of the Cello Concerto of Eugen d'Albert, a fascinating, colorful character. There are at least two different ways to pronounce his name, depending upon whether you go French or German. He went back and forth with it, apparently.
But wasn't he even Scottish or something?
Yeah, that's right. It gets even more complicated than that.
Eugene d'Albert.
That's right. It has something to do with World War I and all of that. But here's the first movement of it, with my guest, Alban Gerhardt, as the soloist, BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, led by Carlos Kalmar. Thank you. those concertos that flows from one movement to the next.
Yeah, who likes these?
Well, Schumann liked them, and
exactly.
Among others, Liszt. That was the first movement of Eugen d'Albert's Cello Concerto in C. Alban Gerhardt, my guest today, the cellist, rediscovering that with us. It had been a while, I guess, since you had recorded that.
Yeah.
An unusual 20 piece.
20 years, isn't it?
An unusual piece, the way that starts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you say this is your second favorite on this particular CD, this Manuel de Falla.
Yep. La Vida Breve. Actually, I played that in youth orchestra. It's an orchestra piece. And I fell in love with this girl for, I was 15, and she never loved me back. So it was old, sad memories.
Here we go. Well, it's hard not to hear applause after that one. That's a fun, lively piece, as performed by Alban Gerhardt and Rinda Dobczynski.
Yes.
And that was Spanish dance from La Vida Breve by Manuel de Falla. Well, it's been a pleasure having you around for the midday today.
Thanks, Alban, for having me, Norman.
And have a great time playing the Walton Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon.
Can't wait.
The Madison Symphony.
Thank you.
Looking forward to that.